Normally, at this time of the week, I make little jokes about having a Shapiroette with Bruce, but given the somber nature of events in the US, that seems wholly inappropriate. So for once, I shall give Bruce an entirely formal introduction. It is time for our weekly Voice of America, Bruce Shapiro, Executive Director of the Dart Center for Journalism and Trauma at Columbia University. Well, Bruce, things don't get much more traumatic than Las Vegas.
Well, no, you don't. This is, it seems to be the worst mass shooting in modern American history. The body count at this point is up to 59 dead and some hundreds, up to 500 people wounded. And of course, the shooter is himself dead. While the physical trauma of this shooting in Las Vegas is still fresh and the crime scene is still a crime scene, the politics have already begun. Overnight, there is an intense debate beginning with the White House on the one hand saying, as the National Rifle Association always does after mass shootings, now is not the time to talk about changing America's gun laws. And a chorus of dissenters led by especially Senator Christopher Murphy from Connecticut, Chris Murphy, whose district includes Sandy Hook, saying, if, as Rabbi Hillel would say, if not now, when? This is a shattering moment. Las Vegas,
look,
in a
Bruce,
certain
the problem
way
is, if
is
the
America's city.
Sorry.
Everybody goes there.
The problem is that if U.S. policy didn't change after Sandy Hook, it will never change. You don't, for all the horrors of what's just happened, the idea of a mass slaughter of children didn't change the dynamics of American politics.
Well, one of the problems with these profoundly divisive issues is that things can seem stuck until suddenly, for reasons that are not always clear, they're not. Think about segregation in the American South. Emmett Till was horribly murdered in 1954. And at that point, people essentially were saying segregation will be with us forever. And within a decade, legal segregation had passed, and the debate changed in a profound way, thanks to a generation of activists and the shifting sands of American politics. You know, the NRA has had unchallenged power and financial clout in American politics for a generation, but that may not go on forever. Look, this was an attack, to be coldly political for a minute, this was an attack on a country music concert. This was an attack on the kind of event that is associated with, not always fairly, but nonetheless associated with Republican voters. That is associated, I think, in President Trump's mind with his own constituency, a mostly white crowd, a crowd in cowboy hats and cowboy boots. We actually last night had one of the guitarists from the band that was playing at this festival at the time of the shooting saying he's been wrong about guns and it is time to change the conversation. You can't tell. And certainly whatever President Trump says or does when he goes to Las Vegas tomorrow after a flyover in Puerto Rico where he's not going to stop to actually talk to anybody, that's not going to change things. But this particular catastrophic shooting, could turn out to be one of the events that changes the dynamic. I personally am not ready to give up on change. Deeply entrenched issues nonetheless can sometimes move in unexpected ways.
Well, I hope you're right, and let us start that process by declaring the NRA a terrorist organization, which is pretty much exactly what it is. Let's look at another topic, if we might. Let's talk about the new Supreme Court term, because, boy, have they got a busy schedule and some incredibly significant decisions.
Well, indeed, and one of them, a case being heard today, actually ties very closely to the question of Republican dominance in Congress and the power of the NRA and other right-wing lobbies. Today, the Supreme Court, the first full term with Justice Neil Gorsuch on the bench replacing Antonin Scalia, is hearing a crucial voting rights case from Wisconsin, which asks whether it is constitutional for state legislatures dominated by one party to so precisely gerrymander, so precisely draw the maps of electoral districts that it becomes unconstitutional, that it makes democracy impossible. The question a group of mostly Democratic voters from Wisconsin are asking the Supreme Court to take up is, do the people elect their representatives, or are the representatives electing their own voters, basically? The Supreme Court has considered this in the past, last time in an important way about 13 years ago, and at that time, the swing vote, as it is now, was Anthony Kennedy, the Reagan nominee. Back then, he said, well, I don't really like gerrymandering, but I can't figure out a mechanism that would help us measure and know when a district is too partisan. This year, armed with the latest technology, with maps and with statistics and the power of data, the court has taken up the case, and there's some reason to think that the court may be willing to look at our polarized politics in a new way and ask whether Republican dominance of state legislatures, any one party's dominance of a state legislature, creates an unconstitutional self-perpetuation machine for that party.
There was an expression of almost orgasmic delight from the NRA when Trump made his appointment to the Supreme Court. Doesn't that gentleman make defeat inevitable?
Not necessarily. First of all, the math on the court didn't change. This was a one-for-one swap of Justice Antonin Scalia for Justice Neil Gorsuch. Like-minded social conservatives, like-minded anti-big government conservatives. It doesn't really change the math. The more consequential seat is Justice Kennedy's, and he is now quite old. He's the oldest justice on the court, but he seems healthy and vigorous and is in
unpredictable
danger of resigning. And then the other thing is that we do now have an interesting new dynamic with Justice John Roberts, who is a conservative appointed by President Bush. But he's been very alive, it's clear in some of the decisions he's written, to the reputation of the court. And I would expect that he views the court as needing to stand above partisan politics and not being seen as simply a kind of Republican patronage machine. Whether that's enough to overcome his ideological concerns in this case, I don't know. But in healthcare, with Obamacare and with a couple of other issues like that, he has wanted to appear to take a more kind of social consensus position. So I think it's a wide open case at this moment.
As you know, we're having a plebiscite in Australia over same-sex marriage, and that takes us to that interesting case from Colorado where the Supremes have to discuss a wedding cake.
Indeed, there's a baker who has a regular bake shop who refused a gay couple who were getting married their cake. And he said, look, I just go to another baker. On religious grounds, I object to this. I'm just not going to do it. And it's an interesting case because it pits two cherished constitutional principles against one another. On the one hand, the baker is saying the First Amendment guarantees my right to religion and my right to free speech, and that should trump all other claims. And by the way, President Trump has weighed in on the baker's side. On the other side, you have a couple who are saying, look, this violates civil rights laws. This violates anti-discrimination and public accommodation laws. When you have a business, you can't discriminate against one class of people based on your religious beliefs. If you have a bus company, you can't refuse carriage to African Americans just because God tells you to do so. That's a violation of civil rights laws, and those plaintiffs, or those that side, actually, the baker is the plaintiff, but that side is claiming, look, this is unconstitutional discrimination. It's important in two ways. One is, first of all, simply as a gay rights case, as a test of how far a court that has already validated same-sex marriage will go to protect the rights of gay people, and also an important test of the outer limits of the religious freedom claim. There was a case a couple years ago in which the Supreme Court said upheld the right of religious hospitals, of Catholic hospitals, to not offer their employees certain contraceptive services and other things. So the question is this an extension of that, or is it an extension of the marriage equality case? Very interesting. That does not necessarily unite the court's conservatives. Interesting argument. We don't know the outcome.
Bruce, thanks for that. Bruce Shapiro, Exec Director at Dart Center for Journalism and Trauma at Columbia and contributing editor at The Nation.